Welcome into the sixth episode of the fourth season of the Sabermetrics podcast. Nailed it that time. My name is Bill. Alongside me, as always, is Walt. Walt, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Looking forward to another episode of this podcast. It's been a while since we ripped off two of them in a two-week span.
Yeah, no, I mean, we have the trade deadline coming up on Friday. We are recording Tuesday evening. This is maybe our fourth take because I kept messing up the intro, and it's not even a difficult intro, so there we go. We're going to get right into it when it comes to the trade deadline, and then we'll talk about all the other things that are kind of happening around this and then take a wider look at the Sabres. So, trade deadline-wise, I'm going to list some names. You're going to tell me on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 gone. Consider them 100% gone, and 1 is they're not getting traded. It's not happening. Don't worry about it. So I'm going to name some names, and Walt, you're going to tell me 1 to 10. Do you think these guys are getting moved, or do you think they're staying? Number 1, Kyle Opposo.
I think are we doing 1 for most likely to be traded?
1 is, he is not getting traded at all. 10, he is gone.
All right, yeah, then I think I got to go 9 here. I mean, just with everything that Opposo said in interviews and after games, and the fact that he mentioned that, like, his future, like, him and Kevin Adams have already discussed it. Like, that's not really something you say if you plan on staying. So I do think he's probably most likely gone at the deadline if they can find a suitor. And he's still a pretty good veteran addition to any lineup. So I don't think Sarah's will have a problem moving him. I don't think the return will be crazy. But I do think he's a guy that kind of wants to play playoff hockey, and I don't think he's be able to get that in Buffalo at his age. I think he realizes that.
Would you be open, if he hangs up the skates this season, would you be open to bringing him back as some kind of assistant coach or skills coach or anything like that? Because I know specifically for me, I'll just add my two cents. I'm not going to do this for every single guy, but last episode I was very upset with him and Zemgus Girgensons and some of the leadership with the whole not saluting fans or whatever. But if you take a wider look at it, like, Kyle Opposo is a good dude. And he's a good leader, and he's been a good ambassador for this team, and he's stuck through a lot of crap. Was he part of the crap? Yeah, there were some issues for sure, but he's seen it through to the other side, and there's something to be said for, like, treating him right and getting him to go play playoff hockey. That's kind of my two cents on it. I think he should go for the sake of giving someone else more time, and also for the sake of him playing some playoff hockey. He hasn't done it very much. I think it was, that one series that the Islanders had? And so it's...
Yeah, it was a while ago.
That was a while ago. And that was when Tavares was still on the Islanders. So
yeah,
let's just kind of put aside, you know, maybe some of the bad things that have happened when he was on the ice or maybe under his quote-unquote watch as a captain, and just good dude. At the end of the day, you know, I think the Sabres should do right by him. And I'll be happy to see him go because he'll be going to hopefully play some playoff hockey, and it's like a win-win in my opinion. And it also pushes the players saying, hey, he wasn't going to be your captain forever. You guys need to figure this out yourselves, and someone needs to kind of step up and take that role. So I think it's a win-win all around, and I'm at a 10. I think he's gone, and for like the best of reasons, not like get this dude gone. Do you have anything else on Opposo?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of a tough situation with him because he was definitely like that veteran piece that was supposed to like bring the Sabres to that next step in the Eichel Reinhardt era, but they're just lacking in so many other areas that
he wasn't going to change.
Really worked out for him, and then obviously the injuries, the concussions. I mean, he's a guy who nearly had to retire. I mean, he was in the ICU, I believe a brain injury or something along those lines. Like, during one of those concussions, I know he was in pretty bad shape and looked like he may have to retire, but he was able to bounce back from that. So he had a really interesting career. I don't really know, like, how he's going to be viewed in, like, Sabres history in the next 20 years. I think a lot of people try to forget this era, but he's definitely going to be a key part of a lot of these guys' future careers as a Sabre. So if they keep him around in maybe a Craig Anderson role, I think that would be pretty cool because a lot of the guys he played with will be here for the next 7, 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, a guy like Zach Benson, he's going to be the same age as Jeff Skinner in 13 years. Like, that's how young some of these guys are that Okposo has played on the same team with. So I think if they do keep him around in an advisory role, like similar to Craig Anderson, I think that that would be great for both parties.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Just for any listener out there, I am trying to tweak the audio live here. It's been a little, during our test pre-show, they weren't that great. They were kind of all over the place, to be honest. So if it isn't the best audio quality, I do apologize. I'll try to do some post-editing as well to kind of make it a little bit better. I've kind of struggled with that recently and not something I really care to admit, but that's just where we're at. We are going back 1 to 10, Eric Johnson. Do you think 1 to 10 he's getting traded or not?
I'd probably say a 10 with him. I really just think just with kind of how they have been using him in recent games. I mean, there's that one game where Dahlin played like 30 minutes and Eric Johnson played 3 minutes and change. He's been scratched a few games. He's been injured a few. I think he's a guy who I think he truly believed in this team that they could make that push for the playoffs this season. So I don't really think he was expecting to be in this spot at this point as we approach the trade deadline. So, I mean, he's a guy that will probably be moved. I think he definitely didn't have the best career in Buffalo. Definitely a lot of struggles here, but I know everyone in the NHL and everyone on the Sabres team seems to love the guy. He seems to have a great personality. I think he was like a real good veteran addition to the locker room in terms of that aspect, but at this point, he's going to be someone that I think they moved on from.
For sure. Eric Johnson, the person, like, I have no qualms. Seems like a really good dude, like you said. Seems like the guys really respect him. I mean, he's been in the league long enough to know, you know, kind of how to act and to lead by example and kind of show young guys, like you said, Benson or Paterka, other guys, you know, kind of the way and how to manage many, many years of playing in the NHL just to not be a flash in the pan. I'm separating that with Eric Johnson, the player. Eric Johnson, the player, goodbye. That's it. Goodbye. Thanks for coming. Again, this I'm separating the two because this is nothing to do with him as a person. That you as a hockey player, you put the Sabres in a position where they had to play Dahlin over half the game. Because you were so ineffective and they gave him a million chances and they were sitting Ryan Johnson after he would make one mistake for Eric Johnson's five. Eric Johnson, the player, goodbye. Eric Johnson, the person, I wish you nothing but the best. And that's kind of, I am separating the two there because it's just, I don't want to assassinate a dude's character, but also say like, dude, that was really poor performance on the ice. And I feel bad because you could also tell he was mentally there and like able to do it and his body just couldn't. Like it's almost like he didn't realize his body couldn't do things. I'm getting older too and I'm realizing, holy crap, I just can't do that as well as I can before. And so like totally understandable, but at the same time, we are a team that has not made the playoffs in this long. We're going to have some kind of standards. I'm now putting incredibly high standards on the Sabres because that's what other franchises do. That's what playoff franchises do. And if we want to be a playoff franchise, it starts with how we treat these players instead of being like, oh my God, I'm sorry it didn't go well. No, it's just like, you weren't good enough. Goodbye. It's just, I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be harsh. And this is not about the person. This is the player. So moving on to the next person, Victor Olofsson.
He's a player that I haven't really thought about in a very long time. He really hasn't had like an awful year this year. He hasn't played that much, but they were able to throw him on that fourth line with like some of their typical fourth liners, and he's able to play like kind of a more physical game at times, but it's still like kind of a guy you don't really know what he is. And he wasn't really able to get his shots off on the power play this year at 5-on-5 that much, so that goal scoring went way down. I think he's a guy who... I think he'll be a guy who's in the NHL for a few more seasons. I don't think he'll be with the Sabres, and it won't be at $4 million. It'll probably be closer to that $900 million range, but I think he'll
$900
stick around.
million, eh? No, I couldn't help myself. But no, I know you. I
I
know what you were
messed
saying.
up there.
I couldn't help
Yeah,
myself.
I think he's worth probably an entire franchise.
It's not good. I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it.
Yeah, so I'd say, I mean, just with how much his cap hit is, I'd probably put him at
No.
like a two,
Yeah.
three, maybe. I just don't, that cap hit's a lot for a guy that hasn't really played that much this season.
There's also something that I've been going back and forth on is like, how bad do I feel for players like Zemgus Girgensons, Kyle Okposo, Eric Johnson, Jacob Bryson, Victor Olofsson? You guys are making a lot of money. If you are on another team, you'd be
Yeah.
making maybe you'd be making maybe making league minimum. So like, they're not fetching that much money on the open market from other teams. Well, maybe. I highly doubt it. I don't want to say they would never, but
It's just the Buffalo tax. I mean, if you're
yeah.
bad for
Yeah.
this long, you kind of have to pay that extra money to attract a guy to come here.
We
Because
will
it seems like
actually
most players want to play on a winning team.
we're going to talk about that shortly here. My thing with Olofsson, and this is nothing about him. What did bringing back Olofsson accomplish? They had multiple chances to sell high. When he was on very good goal paces last season, mostly, even the season before that, but last season. And now they're going to essentially lose him for nothing. That's poor management of your assets. You brought him back just like everyone else. He's not even playing. He can't even crack a lineup. A lineup that's what, 10 points out of a playoff spot? There goes his value. You mismanaged the asset. That's a strike against Kevin Adams to me. You just did. Like you can't do it. It just that's very frustrating. They could have sold high on him and they just didn't. They could have recouped that second that they got that they sent over to Minnesota for Greenway. I think at his peak, you could have easily gotten a second round pick for Victor Olofsson. I am very bad at judging trades or contracts, but come on, that's not out of the realm of possibilities at all.
I'm forgetting kind of where he was at as a player, but I do recall like he was putting up pretty crazy goal totals, and a lot of NHL teams, if you find a team that doesn't go too deep in their research, like how this guy's scoring, I mean his shot's elite. I think it's among the best in the
Oh,
league. It's
absolutely.
everything else that's kind of iffy. So I think at the time, I think they maybe could have pushed a late first round pick for him. I think it's all really just about building up that hype pre-deadline. I feel like there's guys' names you hear prior to every deadline. I don't know if it's like the agents kind of pushing guys like Friedman and other media guys to push their clients' names to the front, but someone like Luke Shen, like last trade deadline, I didn't even know that guy was still in the league. And
Yeah.
then he's being talked about as like a top trade asset. I'm like, wow, I thought that guy retired in like 2014.
Yeah, I mean that is part of it too. How much GMs actually pay attention to media hype around a specific player, who knows? But we've also seen them overpay like crazy. Look at Tampa paying for Janot and Barkley Goodrow.
Yeah,
I mean, there's your
that's
example
nuts
right there.
trade.
And especially in the playoffs, teams want guys that can score on the power play. Like that's that I believe that was like a hot commodity the last couple of years is guys that can produce on the power play. And that's someone like we've seen it before with him, and you probably could have, I mean, not recently, obviously, but you probably could have gotten something good for that. So now it is what it is. He's probably gone. But is there anyone else? Clifton, no. That's an untradeable contract. Bryson, no. I mean, Casey Mittelstadt. Do you
Oh,
think
yeah, I guess he's a guy
he is
that.
a guy, but at the trade deadline? Do you think I personally for me that's like a two, maybe a three.
Yeah, I'd probably put him at two or three. I know there's some talk on Sabres Twitter a while ago after that Lindholm trade being like, oh, Sabres could maybe get a similar value package. But they're at a point, I think, of their build right now where they really can't afford to lose guys and hope to replace them with someone else. I mean, they got the assets right now where they could keep this entire roster and purely add to it with all the cap space and draft picks they have. And there's not going to be a team gunning for a playoff spot right now. that's going to trade the Sabres a player that's under contract for a few more years, that's a good veteran player. Like, playoff teams don't shed guys like that prior to entering the playoffs unless the contract situation's iffy. But Buffalo is 100% not the market right now to take on a guy with a contract that's expiring soon that has no ties to this city or team, because that player will walk as soon as that contract expires.
Absolutely.
So at this point, they really just have to... I think with the Mittelstadt situation, it's almost... I know he's got two more years till his UFA. I wouldn't really be against just taking him to arbitration and getting him that two-year deal. If things are going well after those 2 years, he's probably going to want to stay here anyway, and maybe he could work out something with a 4 or 5 year term with him. If things are going bad, then really nothing matters, because that means the Sabres are on like what, a 15-year playoff drought, and they're probably going to blow things up anyway. So at this point, I just take the guy to arbitration and get another 2 years here and evaluate everything 2 years from now.
Do you think we are seeing the peak of Casey Mittelstadt? Do you think this season, or you know, his recent form, even dating back to the end of last season, do you think this is his peak, or do you think there's still more in the tank?
I think he's definitely entering his peak right now. I don't know how long it's going to last for, but it's just the playmaking, all the stuff he does to make plays, just his puck fakes, everything with his game. I think he's truly developed kind of a strong NHL playmaking mentality, something he didn't have in his first few seasons here. I also think he's in much better shape too than his first few seasons in the NHL. He's a guy that kind of looked tired on every shift. Now he's been pretty much a true two-way center at times. I mean, he's hustling back, making plays on the defensive end. I think he's really grown as an NHLer. A bit of an unconventional path to get to where he's at now, but there's no denying that he's one of the best five-on-five playmakers of the past few seasons, and even on the power play, and we saw it on the overtime power play a few games ago, that pass to Dahlin. Mm-hmm. He's just a fantastic playmaker, and I think he's a guy the Sabres should try their hardest to keep around. The cap's going up, some contracts are coming off the books. I think there's definitely a way to make room for him.
Credit where credit is due. He really has worked on the endurance and strength and even, you know, speed, while keeping his, you know, somewhat stockier frame in a sense, or like bigger, where he's not just getting put, you know, bounced around all the time. And you know, he's still has the ability to, you know, kind of what do you say, stick handle in a phone booth, I guess. Could you ever imagine that after our first couple episodes of this podcast saying saying what you say now about Casey Mittelstadt?
I mean, that was kind of the first, I think it was our first ever episode. We were talking about Mittelstadt, and then eventually it turned into, oh, this Tage guy sucks too.
Yeah.
And those are the kind of two guys that it looked like everything was trending the wrong direction, and then they just figured things out at one point and kind of set a baseline as just a above average NHLer.
Speaking of people that we were down on, specifically for me, and I've been very open about this, I've always been down on UPL. I've been a doubter, and I have my reasons. I've stated them before. I'm not going to start doing that now because he's playing very well, and it's like it's like starting to pick apart. Like, you get a grade back, it's 95 out of 100, and you start complaining about the extra 5. You're like, well, what happened here? Which, by the way, that actually happened to me in college. I was in a class, and the girl that was sitting next to me, I got a better grade than her, and she thought I was an idiot. And so she freaked out and went to the teacher, and she got a good grade. And the teacher's looking at her like, what is wrong with you? Your grade's fine. And she was so upset. Anyway, it was so funny. She definitely thought I was stupid, and she's probably not wrong. But yeah, anyway, UPL has been remarkable. We've said it before, say it again. Credit where credit is due. It has been impressive. Two things on UPL specifically. One is more him and kind of the dynamic, and two is more team related. The dynamic of UPL and Levi as a tandem next season, what do you think about that? My thought was, I'm really stretching here, but it's kind of the Ryan Miller, Marty Biron situation, where Ryan Miller had a very, very competent backup who could definitely be a starter, and ended up being a starter elsewhere when he got traded to Philly and then, you know, moved on from there. And Marty Biron, having someone like Devon Levi behind UPL, I think is going to be a very good thing to push him, saying like, hey man, if you falter or whatever, like, we have someone here that we can go to. As of right now, luckily, right now, he's not showing any complacency after getting played a ton, because he knows they're not playing Comrie. If they're not going to play Comrie on a back-to-back against his former team, that's all you need to really know about their confidence in a guy like Comrie between the pipes. So they're riding UPL, and he's not getting complacent at all. So that is a good thing. But I think the dynamic of UPL and Levi as a tandem next season is a good idea for UPL and even Levi, because Levi's like, look, UPL's playing out of his mind. If I want to be a starter on this team, I have to outperform him. And every time I get in that crease, it has to be my game. I have to go off. And I think that's a really good dynamic. You may say that's not enough starts for Levi or whatever. I don't care. At this point, I do not care. Next year is playoffs or bust. This year was like, we really should be making the playoffs, but there's all the projections saying like they really shouldn't. Well, this year, when we'll get to, you know, moves that need to be made or whatever, you have to make the playoffs next season. You have to. And that means putting your best players on the roster. And so that's UPL and Levi, unless they bring in another goalie. And so what is your thoughts on that dynamic specifically? And then we'll kind of bring it back UPL-wise towards this season and this team.
I think that combo, with the way both these guys are playing this season, I think they're going to be kind of the next, like, Ullmark-Swayman combo like we see in Boston. I know it's, like, pretty high expectations for that duo. But
it's a comparison,
that's,
you know.
Kind of where I see you trending. Yeah. I mean, just in terms of, like, usage and all of that, like, I think Boston's really been a team that's shown that you could make two elite goalies work on the same team. You could have a guy win a Vezina one season and turn your 1B the next season. I think that's kind of the ideal scenario for every NHL team. Even take a look at a team like Vegas going back and forth between Aiden Hill and Logan Thompson. I think with the Sabres next year, it's been something I have talked about, is with just making Devin Levi the backup next season. I think that provides the Sabres with the highest ceiling goaltending tandem they could possibly find. There's just never really a lot of good goalies on the free agent market. A lot of the top names kind of turn into not that great of goaltenders, like we've seen with Jonas Korpisalo last season. And I think Levi's kind of shown in the AHL, he's been dominant some nights. He's let in a few goals some games that he maybe wants back, but I mean, he's got a swagger. He even has a swagger at the NHL level. I mean, we've seen him in that Boston game, the Montreal game, where he looked absolutely incredible. So I think he's a guy where I've got no problem giving him 30 or so starts in the NHL next season, giving UPL 52, something like that. Because Levi's going to be a guy, he's going to have to get used to maybe only starting 30 or so games at the NHL level for the next 3-4 years. And UPL is a guy that's only, I believe, 24 years old. So this is going to be his net as the 1A guy until he loses it. And with the way UPL is playing, just with the style of game he plays, with using his size and agility, I don't think that net's going to be given up for a while. So I think at this point, when next season's a high pressure, most likely have to make it to the playoff season, I think the highest ceiling option for you is going with the hot young prospect and Devin Levi as your backup goalie. I think that will provide much bigger of a punch to the Sabres team next year than having a guy like Kevin Lehkonen or whatever backup you find on the market.
You can't have another backup like Comrie this season. Again, Comrie the person seems like an awesome dude. He sounds like Macaulay Culkin. Said it once, I'll say it again. It, like, seems like a good dude. A lot of this isn't about these guys as people. It's strictly the hockey player. And so that's it. Like, you need to have, you also have to have someone that is hungry, like Levi. Like, not someone that's, it's, you're really reading into it. You don't know how they actually feel or how they act, but someone that's, you know, happy-go-lucky, like Comrie is. No, you want someone that's hungry and is going to push you and push you and push you. So, speaking of UPL and bringing it back to this season, where would this team be without him? Either without him or him playing like he did last season. I mean, we're talking, and this all relates to our next topic too, but we're talking a bottom five team. I mean, they're not much higher than that. Like, we are talking about an abysmal hockey team. And that is genuinely frightening because, as we saw in New Jersey, bad goaltending can get a coach fired. And another thing about UPL is I'm going to save my unheaping praise saying he needs to 100% be the starter next season, because we also saw last year with New Jersey goaltenders, very good. This year, same dudes that were playing well last year, not anymore. So that's another dynamic that we need to remember. But can you imagine if UPL was just like even a little worse this season, where this team would be? I mean, that is a scary thought. I mean, any thoughts on, you know, like, he's almost, would you say UPL has almost saved Granato's job this season because the pressure would have been too high if he was playing too poorly on Adams to do something? And excuse me, I'm sorry, but a letter to just season ticket holders saying, oh, we're not doing good, that ain't enough, especially if UPL was playing worse.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting scenario. I do think the weird thing with the Sabres team is I feel like if they got to play every game over again and say UPL was worse, I think this team just gets more points, not than they have now, but I think they do gain points just on not having dumb stuff happen to them in every single game. Because I feel like just when this team started the season, I'm just thinking back on like the Islanders game where Sabres played an incredible game, come back into it, tie things up. It's a head-to-head game. Then Islanders get it. There's like a weird deflection goal with like 2 minutes, 30 seconds left, go up by one, win the game by one goal. I feel like that type of stuff has happened so often this season that it's hard to believe how that could be repeatable just because it seems so random. But I guess that's really been the theme of this team. We've seen in the Florida game a few games ago where they got that just awful penalty called on Don Granato to go 5-on-3 late in the tied hockey game. I don't think I've ever seen that called on a coach at that stage of the game, and Florida scored. They win by one goal. It's just been weird situational stuff. So I think if UPL is worse, the Sabres would probably be a few points worse. I still don't think they touched that like Chicago, San Jose type tier. I think they're like
they'd be not, right above it.
Which I guess is a good thing, because I feel like every other Sabres season where their star players have just completely bottomed out and the depth hasn't really held up that well, I feel like those have typically been the season where the Sabres finish in last place. So to kind of have our everything's gone wrong, this is horrible baseline be like 9th, 10th last place, I guess that's progress. But yeah, at the same time, UPL is definitely, he's been the main reason the Sabres have been able to go on kind of this push late in the season. I don't really think it's going to turn into much in terms of a playoff berth. It's just too far of a stretch. But I think it's going to be enough just to kind of build on what they're creating to end this season, which I don't think is always a bad thing. I don't really think going on a late season run and giving hope for next year is a bad thing. I think for some guys, you can build confidence going the next season. And we've seen that with Casey Mittelstadt. He had not a great start to last season. Kind of struggled to find his place in the lineup. And then once Tage came out of that lineup late in the season, he kind of took over the responsibility of that role and really just never looked back and continued to build off that play this season. So I think that's kind of the hope you want with the Sabres to end this season and heading into next season. But at the same time, a lot of their top guys are still playing pretty poor hockey. Like, even though they're record slightly better, it's not really because of the guys you want it to be, because Tage, he's had a few flashes, but he still just looks like he's lost something. Tuck, once again, few flashes, just not as good as last year. Skinner, you could tell he's hurt. His game's always a bit questionable. He's a player, you either love him or you hate him. But it really just, like, not many of their stars have looked that great, even though the Sabres have been winning some more games.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, we are recording this on Tuesday night. The Sabres are off playing Toronto Wednesday and Nashville Thursday. And I am just getting word that Zach Benson has just been called for a penalty. So Moving to the, I guess we can kind of, moving back to it, a little bit more on the Lindy Ruff situation. It's going to be loud. There's going to be a team, there's going to be a solid group of people that are for bringing him back, and there's going to be a group against. And what I heard it, I remember hearing it years ago when it kind of came up, is someone said like, ooh, this would be interesting for the future. And then someone else on a podcast, I listened to like a bunch of Sabres podcasts the other day, someone mentioned it as well. So like, I couldn't find the specific like quotes or anything from it, but it sounded like Lindy Ruff was kind of eyeing like a front office role at some point, like he would like to. And the guy is what, 64 years old, I think it was. He was born in 1960. So yeah, 64. At some point, you're going to want to get off the ice and not be on the ice for practice every single day with the guys. Like at some point, you have to hang up the skates, literally. And so, would you be willing to maybe bring him in as an assistant coach? Would you maybe be willing to bring him in as someone in the front office? Do you think the Sabres should just avoid all costs, saying like, thank you for the memories, and you know, it would be a very good story and a homecoming and a breath of fresh air for the Sabres? But it's just not right. It's just not the right fit either for coaching or the or anything, I was going to say GM, but anything in the front office. Do you think you should take Granato's job? Do you think you should take Matt Ellis's job? Anything of your thoughts on, you know, any kind of reunion with Lindy Ruff?
I'd say for me, my thoughts on Lindy Ruff is probably like head coach or nothing for me. I think if he's a guy you bring in, I'd bring him in as a head coach. I won't say I'd be like that aggressive with like fire Granato right now and bringing Lindy Ruff, but if they brought him in as a head coach, I'd completely understand it, not just from a nostalgia standpoint, but from a hockey playing standpoint as well. The Devils were a team, first year in Lindy Ruff, they were horrible, one of the worst teams in the NHL. They become a 112-point team last season. They really transformed kind of a goofy rush offense type team, not too different than the Sabres have been at times, and turned that into a team that's just dominant two-way play, killing plays early, turning to rush plays. And he struggled with that same type of play style this season because the goaltending kind of fell apart and they had a lot of key injuries. And playing that type of system without your top guys, it gets difficult. So I think from a pure hockey tactics perspective, I think there's a lot of things in your rough that make sense in Buffalo. And with everything seemingly going wrong with this team, and all of the people that grew up with Lindy Ruff as being the Sabres head coach, and they're in like their late 20s, 30s now. These are the people that are buying tickets to the Sabres game. So I think from that perspective, having Lindy Ruff back as a head coach makes a lot of sense. In terms of another role, like assistant, I just can't see, if I'm Don Granato and you bring a guy like him on as an assistant and Granato didn't hand select him, that's kind of showing me as the coach that I'm probably gonna get fired soon. And yeah, that's really the point of even sticking around. It's just never a good sign. And no, usually when people are about to get fired, they don't act in the team's best interest. So that's not something I do.
Ask Peter Chiarelli.
Front office, like advisory. Yeah. And then like advisory role, front office. For me, it would have to be kind of like a loose advisory role. Like he's on the beach in Boca Raton and they give him a call and they're like, what do you think about this? Like, oh, that sounds cool. If he's a guy that's in like the suites or press box every night type of advisor, I don't really think that's something I'm a fan of on many NHL teams. I'm just not a fan of too many cooks in the kitchen in terms of the front office, like not really knowing who the main decision maker is. I think if you don't trust your GM enough to make decisions like that, then you need to find a new GM. I just don't trust the too many cooks in the kitchen approach that the Sabres tried to do a lot. I know it's kind of an unpopular opinion amongst many fans to be against that, just because a lot of fans want to bring in a president of hockey operations and that sorts. But I mean, I think if you just don't trust your GM enough to be a GM, I think it's time to find a new GM. And I think Lindy Ruff would kind of add a bit of a wrinkle to the team. I think even if he's in that advisory role, he's in the press box every night, I think a guy like Don Granato, whoever the head coach is at the time, will be looking over their shoulder and be like, oh, this guy could pretty easily step behind an NHL bench and decide to fire me. So I think for me, the Lindy Ruff thing stands at like head coach or nothing. I'm not a guy that's like hire Lindy right now. We need him, but if they decide to make that move in the offseason, I don't think I'd be against it.
I'm not totally opposed to Don Granato looking over his shoulder. It's like, hey, dude, you need to produce better results with this team. You've had multiple players take a step back. Multiple, many. And this team hasn't, well, again, this is kind of like going back to what we talked about last episode. It's like, do you want a pat on the back for barely missing the playoffs last season? You didn't make the playoffs. This year, you whiffed hard. Like, I'm not exactly sure that I'm like, oh, no, Don, you don't need to worry about that. Don't look over your shoulder. I would, like, he's not going to bring him in as an assistant coach, but I can see a loose advisory role. And if next season you have to get off to a good start, you have to. There's no other way around it. And if they don't, you bring him right in. He's right there already. I'm not totally opposed to it. That's something we might actually disagree on for like the first time ever, because look, I like Don Granato. Again, I like Don Granato as a person. Seems like a really good dude. He's overcome, you know, a couple really challenging illnesses and everything, but sorry. This is a business. And not making the playoffs again is bad for business. So I'm not totally opposed to it. Will they do it though? I actually do not believe they will. So all of that is to basically say, I don't think it's going to happen. It's unfortunate because I think they should, but it's not going to happen. So
yeah, I just can't see it, especially after Lindy Ruff was available. I think it was during the Ralph Krueger coaching search. I know a lot has changed since then, but I just think that Lindy Buffalo marriage may be over, which is kind of unfortunate because he's probably
legend.
Honestly, he probably is my favorite Sabres figure ever. He's just like, when I think of an NHL head coach, I think of Lindy Ruff. Like, when I think of what I expect out of a head coach in post-game conferences and interviews, I think of Lindy Ruff.
Yeah.
Like, he's just Sabres legend.
I think of him wanting to kill Bob Murray during the fight night with when Drury got nailed by Chris Neal. Again, predatory hit, and the Ottawa Senators retired his number. He's retired Chris Neal's number. I mean, Sabres.
Worse than anything the Sabres have done.
Yeah, poverty somehow. Franchise, you can say that, but man, we're not retiring the number of Matthew Barnaby here. Like, what are we doing? I mean, yeah,
we really are brothers and are struggling with Senators fans, brothers and sisters, and struggling with those fans. I mean,
at least we're not doing
it's
that.
Just a season.
Yeah, I mean, they're really down bad too. It's rough up there, but it might not be getting better for Buffalo because a player has recently rejected a move to Buffalo. It's not the first time, won't be the last. But Chris Tanev. I actually have a bone to pick about this one. Is all right, fair enough. You're you know, Kevin Adams is putting out to the press or someone inside the Sabres media, he said, hey, we tried. Guys, we tried. Here's what you guys tried. You tried to trade for Chris Tanev, who's 34, and you were going to extend him. Have we not learned anything from Eric Johnson? I will say right now, Chris Tanev is better. He is a much better player at this time than Eric Johnson. But my fear is Kevin Adams really is feeling the heat as he should, but he's going to make the wrong decision and give the wrong contract, make the wrong trade. And everyone's clamoring, hey, you need to make a move because he does. I'm worried that move is going to be brutal. Because what kind of moves has he brought in? So far, his best one was he got rid of his best move was bringing in Alex Tuch, Peyton Krebs, who's being misused, and a first round pick turned into Noah Osland. But they also traded the best player. So when it comes to bringing in players, what's his best trade where he's getting the better player? I mean, I guess it's Jordan Greenway because he traded a pick and he got the player. Other than that, Riley Stillman, there's nothing else to go off of.
Forgot about that guy.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, That's my biggest fear, is that he's going to overcompensate because he needs to do something. He has to. Don't get me wrong. Like, he has to do something. But I think that something is going to be a massive whiff. That is my big fear. So what is your thoughts on that? Not only the TANF thing, but also no movement clauses for Buffalo. You have to pay the extra Buffalo tax. Plus, guys are going to want more because of New York State tax. So you have the Buffalo tax. You have the New York State tax. You have the we have sucked for this long tax, which is part of the Buffalo tax. Also, because it's you haven't seen the sun in 3 months, except past couple days, beautiful days. But, I mean, what is your overall thoughts on not only the TANF thing itself and wanting to extend him? I don't know. Maybe it was a one-year extension or something like that, saying, hey, if it doesn't work out well next year, we could have traded you. Fair enough. You would have traded him when he's 35. His birthday's in December. But that worries me. He is a good player, and like bringing him in for this season would have been a good move like 30 games ago. But not only the TANF thing, but the no movement clauses, and just like in general, do you have any confidence in Kevin Adams once he actually makes a move? Because he has to. Is it going to be the right one? Is it going to be good enough? Is he going to overpay grossly? Is he going to sign someone that's way too old and declining and is barely going to help? What are your thoughts on all of that?
I think for me, I'd probably say I got like absolutely zero confidence in Kevin Adams making a good move for that big move for the Sabres. I think that's really the huge downside for me about this season, was if they were just able to take this group and make it to the playoffs without any addition, it would be like, awesome. We don't really have to make any big moves, try to spend big money on a 36-year-old player that shows leadership or whatever they're trying to do. I think at this point, they're going to try to make a splash. It's probably going to be for a player that's not that great, pretty similar to all of his other additions to this team. I think a lot of people forget that he was around for the Cody Eakin addition, which may have been, I think, top 10 worst free agent signings in Sabres history. Was just playing Cody Eakin every single game. I think it was maybe one of the worst Sabres lines I've ever seen with him and Toby Reeder. So, yeah, in terms of confidence with Adams' NHL-level moves, I'd say probably have zero. I think a lot of the good with the Adams era just come from his drafting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really think it's the GM drafting, but I think he does a great job of listening to his scouts, really deferring his opinion to them. I think that's kind of the benefit of having a rookie NHL GM with not a lot of scouting background, is that they kind of defer to their scouts, the guys that know their stuff, the guys that watch the games. And that's the reason we have guys like Benson and Oslin in the system, is that he's been listening to scouts. And Paterka, another example, Jack Quinn. So from that perspective, he's been great. But from the NHL edition perspective, he's been pretty awful. Like, no. I don't really know if their analytics department is really still just working on that like draft model, and that's kind of what they're using them for, if they're using them for NHL level additions, because they're not really signing like savvy type players. Like, they're not signing like Daniel Sprongs or Carter Verhaeghe's when they're available. They're not trading 2 second round picks for Devon Toews. They're settling for guys that have like decent name brands. Like, Cody Eakin played playoff hockey for a bit of Vegas, so you'd recognize him if you saw him on the market. They're really like kind of deferring to guys like Eakin, Johnson, Clifton, just names you've seen playing playoff hockey, thinking that's the reason they're good. And I don't really think that's the way to go about building this team. This team needs more than just vibes and leadership. They need actual good hockey players. That's what kind of why I get sick of seeing like this team needs skill, like this team, or this team has too much skill, we can't add any more skill. Like, where's the skill? This team's 10 points out of a playoff spot.
Yeah,
like how's this team skilled?
I don't know either. I mean, they have the skill players, but they're underperforming, and so like
So at that point, you're not even skilled.
Like, okay, maybe someone listening who's already like pounded the table because we didn't mention it, he did acquire Devon Levi and that first round pick that turned into Yuri Kulik. Couple things on that. They still traded Sam Reinhart. He traded the better player. And like, Devon Levi could be a very good goalie, but as of right now, especially this season, Sam Reinhart's the best player of the bunch. So like, again, he sold the best player for a couple pieces.
That's still on, like, I think, like, the NHL draft scouts for recognizing Levi and players of that caliber, because they're the ones still watching those types of games. So I think even then, they're the guys that identify that talent. I just haven't trusted any NHL level addition this group has made.
And you are the Buffalo Sabres. We already talked about the Buffalo tax and everything. You have to draft well. You can't afford to draft poorly. Like, it just can't happen. And you have to hit on a lot more players than other teams do. So, I mean, that's another standpoint is like, it's almost like a, well, they worked hard. I'm like, they're an NHL team. They have to work hard. You're the Buffalo Sabres. You have to draft well. That's just the way it is. It's not going to work without that. You're not going to get the top end free agents unless you're paying $8 million to Taylor Hall to put up like one goal. Like, that's just the way it is. So that's like, I give him credit for that. It's like, cool, you did the good thing, but you also have to do that. So yeah, you draft well, but again, it's not 100% you. And you when you have like your director of scouting getting visibly emotional at the last draft or the draft before with how much the GM listens to you, because you know all these other GMs are like narcissists that think they know the best and they're going to draft their guy. When you have someone that's like that emotional, Jerry Fortin, I believe his name, Fenton Fortin, it like when he's getting emotional about how much like Kevin Adams listens and he's so open to ideas and stuff like that, it also means he's deferring to those guys, it seems. And so that's kind of where I'm at with that whole situation is like, good, you've done it. But like you're also just the one naming the names when you're calling these guys. Like he's not the one constantly searching for these dudes on a random Tuesday night in December in, you know, Western Canada in the second division for a BCHL game. There we go. You know, like I'm not gonna give him too much credit for that. But at the same time, like it is notable for someone to listen to scouts and actually go with that and put their trust into them. So I mean, there is some praise, but just not that much. And it is kind of a thankless job, but at the same time, you guys have made the playoffs, so I'm not going to thank you for anything. I almost cursed there, so good for me. Kind of going back to whole trades and stuff like that. Once Opozo, let's assume Johnson Opozo. Even, you know, let's just say it, even Gergensen's, because they're like, you know what, man, like, even if you want to re-sign here this offseason, do the whole Matt Molson thing, trade them, get assets, and then sign them in the offseason. Let's say they get rid of Gergensen's too. That means there's spots available. Who would you give the spots to, and how would you kind of rearrange the lineup? The one thing I will say on this before handing it off, Greenway will be in the bottom six. Are you hearing me, Don? He is a bottom six player. Let's start acting accordingly. So, other than that, Walt.
Yeah, well, I'd say, I mean, in terms of replacing those guys, I think you really have to kind of look at some free agent additions, maybe similar to like a Mason Marchman type of player that was available a few years ago. Like, just a guy you could plug in anywhere in the lineup that kind of brings like that forechecking style, but still plays really effective hockey. I think you're kind of just looking for just that versatile piece. I don't really think anyone in the Sabres prospect system can provide that for next season. At least I'm not that confident in it. I think Kulik and Rosane, I think they're, I wouldn't say a full step behind, but they're definitely behind where Quinn and Peterka were when they made the jump to the NHL. Savoy's tearing up the WHL. I'm not too confident he'll be an up and down the lineup contributor for the Sabres next season. So I think that move will have to come via free agency or a trade. Just get a versatile type forward piece that you can plug in throughout the lineup. And I don't even think those types of players are, they're typically not crazy expensive every offseason, and they're somewhat realistic to add, especially if the Sabres have to overpay slightly to convince him to come here. So I think something like that, I think that's kind of the pieces I'd be looking for to replace Gergensen's and Okposo. I wouldn't mind having four lines that are of somewhat level ground. I don't think the fourth line has to be like a tier below type player, so I'm down to just continue to add more talent to this group to replace those two.
following up on my whole being condescending about the whole Greenway thing, that's not a knock on Greenway either. I think he can be an effective bottom six player, but he's a bottom six player. So, like,
yeah,
act accordingly. Specifically for the rest of this season, because I totally agree on that, and we're going to have plenty of offseason to talk about that. Who would you bring up this season? Who would you give time to? Like, yeah, maybe they have to put in Olofsson or something, but let's say they're like, Olofsson, you're just going to sit in the press box because we have to give time to other people. Who would you bring up to replace those guys this season right now? Would it be someone like Rusek? Would it be like a journeyman, kind of like a Weisbach or Murray? I know Murray's had more experience in the NHL, or like even like, I could go through the Amherst roster and probably come up with a couple more, but who would you bring up specifically this season? Because like you can't go out and like acquire someone through free agency. I'm assuming they're not going to bring someone in as a rental for this season. They definitely shouldn't, unless it's future considerations. You know, what would you do this season specifically?
I'd say maybe someone like Rusek. I think it gets kind of tough because the Amerks are in the midst of trying to make a playoff push right now, so it'll be hard to take someone away from there, but I'd probably lean more towards maybe the veteran guys to fill out the press box versus taking away the young players from those games. So it's going to be interesting. I know a lot of people probably want to see like Kulik and Rosén to kind of get a taste of what they could potentially provide to the Sabres team next year. But at the same time, you kind of have to balance that with taking them away from meaningful AHL games, which I know the Sabres have valued a lot. That's one of the reasons they kept Quinn and Paterka down there when the Sabres season fell apart a few years ago. So, yeah, I do think if they add someone, it will be more of a veteran type of player. I don't know if that's exactly the right choice in my mind, because I think maybe having Kulik and Rosén at the NHL level, you can maybe see what these guys could potentially provide for this team next year. But, yeah, I do think it'll probably be just a veteran Rochester forward or two to replace whoever they move, whether it's Okposo or whoever's moved at this trade deadline.
No matter who is called up, there will be the "why are you stealing our players" tweets. Just everyone be prepared for it.
Yeah.
Don't get mad about it. Just ignore them. Again, for the umpteenth time, they forget that they are a farm system, a farm team for an NHL squad, and it is important for the Amerks to do well. It's also important to field a roster for your NHL team. Sometimes you're going to have to call guys up. It's just the way it is. So just, and I'm not trying to talk crap to Rochester fans. I lived in Rochester for a while. They love their team. I can totally understand, you know, like they're losing a really good player. Like that really sucks. But to get mad, the Sabres suck. Why are you stealing our players? At least we have a chance. It's because they're in the NHL. It's called the National Hockey League. That's what they play in. You guys play in the American Hockey League. It's just the way it is. Like, I'm not saying it's right or it's just the way it is. You just have to deal with it. Like, this has been happening since the beginning of time, guys. So, I don't know. Just be prepared for those tweets, because every single time it happens and everyone's like, oh, here come the Amerks fans again. I'm like, yeah, it's because it happens every single time. And I, to an extent, I can understand it, but to another extent, it's like, meh. You gotta get players on NHL time.
Yeah, I've never really understood. I understand the junior hockey fandom. I can understand that. I just don't understand minor league hockey fandom. Like, if a guy's playing too well, you lose him. Like, do you just root for the guy to be good but not great? I respect it, but I just don't really understand. Like, it's definitely hard to be a minor league sports fan.
I almost feel like if it's a guy that has an NHL contract, it's like, shut up. Now, if they started going after guys with, like, AHL contracts only, like a Mason Jobster, you know, whatever his last name is, like, maybe I can understand that, because he's like technically signed with the Amerks and you are literally signing him to your parent club. But these guys, something like,
or like Mersch, does he even have an NHL contract? No,
exactly. He did play a couple of games, what, last season or a season before for them, just when they like went through, maybe it was like the COVID year when like there was like a million guys out for like one or two games or something like that. But yeah. Again, I'm not trying to talk too much crap about Amerks fans or whatever. Like, they really are, they're a passionate fan base for a minor league team. Fair enough. That's awesome. Good on you. Amerks have sweet jerseys. I don't know what to tell you. It's just, I'm just prepared for it. And, oh man, it's always good to, play the hits, you know, play the oldies on the old Twitter machine, especially after some guys get moved. So
it's literally, I feel like deja vu year after year.
Yeah.
With like the same type of
exactly
stuff. Like, oh, which players are we trading for a third round pick? And then, oh, they called up X player from the Amerks. How are we going to beat Hershey in our three game series?
Or you're not beating Hershey because they have freaking Kuznetsov down there and he's going to score like 17 goals a game. It's like, oh, God. They were good beforehand. This is bullcrap.
Kuznetsov.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the Sabres putting about $7 million in NHL players down in Rochester, especially when Bryson was down there. Kuznetsov makes like $8 million a year, and he's down there. Again, he might not be there for forever, obviously. They aren't just going to bury him, I would assume. They're going to try to get him back up. But as of right now, $8 million down there in the AHL. Holy crap. I actually played at the Hershey Arena. It's a nice place, man. That's a nice arena. It was a million degrees in there, and we had like two subs on the bench, but it was a really nice arena. So, and like the Hershey fans, like they're like Amherst fans too. Like they really love their team.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they don't necessarily go off like we were talking about, but they also have pretty cool uniforms too, especially when they did like the dripping chocolate kind of thing or whatever
chocolate.
That was. Yeah. That was cool.
The two-tone brown color uniforms, it's one of the coolest jerseys. Yeah. I mean, just like, I feel like anything chocolate themed in Hershey is like a slam dunk.
Yeah, it don't miss. So, I actually kind of root for them in a sense. Because, like, I don't know, I just think it's kind of like a cool franchise. But, you know, whatever, who cares? It's the Hershey Bears. Anyway, let's talk about some NHL prospects, or Sabres prospects. Hopefully we'll play in the NHL at some point. Two people specifically, Marjala, I believe is his last name. His first name still escapes me. It's Viljami. I'm trying here. We know I'm terrible with names. I went on to Elite Prospects to look up how to pronounce his name, and I think they have it paywalled. They actually, looking at it right now, it is paywalled.
Yeah,
so
do.
That sucks, and that's not happening. Someone else who I can actually mention his name without messing up, Mats Lindgren. What do we think about him as well? I just kind of wanted to pull him out of the bag. And I think we're going to start doing this randomly, just start pulling out random prospects to talk about. I think the next episode, I'm already going to pull out Steven Sarderian, so be prepared for that. But those two guys specifically, Marjala, hopefully that's his last name, or how you pronounce his last name. He's kind of tearing up Liiga, which is the top league over in Finland. 17 goals, 22 assists for 39 points in 57 games. He just turned 21 in January. What did you think of him when they first drafted him? I know you're not necessarily catching up on all these Finnish hockey games. So what have you heard, or you know, what are your kind of thoughts now as opposed to prior, if there are any differences in your thoughts on the player? And would you sign him this offseason to an ELC and then send him back to Finland for a year, sign him and try to bring him over to the United States already? What would you do with him specifically?
Yeah, so for a guy like Viljami Marjala, I mean, he's been pretty great in the Liiga this year. 13 points his last 10 games. It started to heat up. He's played pretty good hockey the past two seasons after struggling in Quebec 2 years ago, playing the Quebec Junior League. He didn't really put up numbers like everyone thought he would. So he's a guy that's kind of really developed as a pro hockey player. He's got great playmaking abilities. He's been one of the better players in Liiga. It's been a difficult league to kind of project those guys in the NHL recently. I mean, we've seen a guy like Arttu Ruotsalainen, who was fantastic in that league, and he kind of struggled to make that jump from the AHL to NHL. But he's still a good AHL player. So with a guy like Marjala, I think he's got another year signed in Finland. There's a transfer agreement between the NHL and Liiga, so I guess he could come over whenever, but I wouldn't be surprised if he stays another year in Finland and then comes over to Rochester after that. I think at that point, then he's going to be aiming to try to push for an NHL roster spot. I think for him, there may be some limitations with that, but just having a guy in the mix who can potentially play NHL games, picked in the mid rounds of the draft, I think that's always pretty solid. So he's someone that I think a lot of Sabres fans should maybe keep a little bit of an eye on over the next season or two, See what he's doing over in Finland. He's been a pretty good prospect for the Sabres and have kind of come out of nowhere after struggling in Quebec for a bit. And then a guy like Mats Lindgren, he's someone that I haven't watched too much of this season, but I just took a quick glance today at his just his pure box score stats, and he's someone who really hasn't progressed that much offensively for a guy supposed to kind of be more of an offensively minded defenseman. Watched him play for the Sabres in the Prospect Challenge. He's a player where he's still so young. I mean, he's 19 years old until August, so there's still a decent amount of runway left in his game. I don't necessarily think he's a guy that I fully believe is ready for pro hockey next season. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to the WHL for an overage year. He just, I just don't really know what to think of him. There's some very good stuff in his game. He's kind of a fun defenseman that tries really cool stuff, but the production's not there. He's not the biggest defenseman. He's not the most elite skater. So he's still a bit of a question mark in my books. I think it was worth the gamble when they drafted him. I just don't really think he's taken the steps forward that he's needed to lock in as an NHL defenseman. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with him.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is there is still runway with him because he is young. So there is a very likelihood that he does go back to the WHL next season, right? Yeah. He can't. What is the... I used to know this years and years ago, but like the cutoff of like by this date, because he's August 22nd, 2004. So later this summer, he's going to turn 20. I believe he can go back to the WHL for one more season without having to go to Rochester. And I think this is one of those opportunities where, you know, how we always complain about like, this is bullcrap. He's way too good for juniors, but he's either NHL or juniors. And it would be so much better if he played in the AHL. I think with him specifically, it's probably not a bad thing that he would go back to the WHL.
Yeah, he needs more juniors.
Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, be patient.
Yeah. Another player the Sabres just traded away last year for Riley Stillman, Josh Bloom. He's someone where he played a few pro hockey games with Vancouver. I believe he played in the ECHL and AHL, and they decided to send him back this year, back to Saginaw for an overage season. He's been playing pretty good hockey on a decent Saginaw team down there, so it's not really unheard of for guys that you draft out of juniors to need that overage season down there. It's typically not a fantastic sign, but there is one Sabres draft pick by the name of Brandon Hagel who also spent an overage season WHL. Now he's one of the best players in the NHL. So
what happened there? Yeah, what happened there? Why isn't he on the Sabres?
Yeah, I heard they maybe let him walk.
Yeah,
maybe because they switch GMs every 2 years. So
it was almost like they didn't have any forward prospects at that time either. And so signing him would have been no big deal. I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there. Who am I to say? Ugh, God, this freaking team. We're going to still be making podcasts about them. That's for damn sure. Until I'm in the dirt. you know what? I kind of already asked those crap. I was going to do some true or falses, but they already kind of came up in conversation, so that kind of sucks. You know what? Fair enough. I'll ask this one because I already mentioned it, but true or false, the one letter that was only to season ticket holders talking about how they haven't been good enough and not up to our standards, which I don't really know what kind of standards they're talking about, but was that enough from Kevin Adams and Terry Pegula? And like, what would you want from Terry Pegula? I remember putting something out and someone mentioned, like, well, what do you want him to do? Start meddling and, start meddling in moves again? I'm like, no, I want him to, like, literally say anything to the media or say anything to fans or, like, at least let us know he's alive. Like, I don't need him calling the shots on moves or trades or draft picks or whatever for him to show that he actually cares about this team. I'm sure he does, but show us. Go, like, it's not a bad thing if I know he doesn't like speaking to the media. Get a favorable interview with someone and sit down and be like, it hasn't been good enough. And I'm not going to start pointing fingers, but this is very disappointing. And I can see where our fans are coming from. Something. And is it going to be good enough for 90% of people? Probably not, but do something. That at least that's my thing. So like, I know I'm kind of like leading you down the path of answering it a certain way, but true or false, that wasn't good enough.
I think for me, I'd probably go with false. I think kind of wanting Pegula more involved with the team kind of gets misconstrued as wanting him to make roster decisions and whatnot, but really we're just asking him to be a PR guy. I mean, I know Kim Pegula, she was a former president of the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, my thoughts and prayers are out to her. She
Always, yeah.
continues to recover, but she was great as kind of a PR person. Like, she at least tried with that job. You at least knew she was there. I mean, at least you knew, like, this team cared about the fans a little bit. I don't still don't think, like, that era of the Pegulas completely taking over the PR side of things is better than what we had during the Ted Black era, where it kind of felt like you had someone in the Sabres organization that was there step by step with Sabres fans throughout the rebuild process. I mean, they were sending out pamphlets to season ticket holders with scouting reports on all the prospects they had in the system, about like what the coach and GM are saying about the future of this team, like kind of how things are progressing. You almost felt like, as a fan, you were a part of the team. I mean, which you are as a fan, you're a key part of that team's existence. So I think that's really just what they're lacking with Terry Pegula's ownership currently, is that it seems like when things go south, it's like there's no one to answer for the organization when the fans questioning everything that's going on, and then the players start to feel the heat. Really, everyone in the organization starts to feel the heat more than they maybe should, just because they don't have that PR shield to kind of calm fans down. And then you get kind of that Mike Harrington article, the conflict between players and fans. Then you get players not wanting to sign here because of that type of stuff. So I think they just need that PR layer. It's not going to help things on ice, but it's just going to show fans that this ownership group cares, that they understand our frustrations. And I just think they've done a very bad job at expressing any of that. And I think that's because they truly don't care about the state of this team right now.
My thing is, we all know he cares about the Bills more. It makes him way more money than the Sabres are probably in the red on the Sabres a good amount. Don't make it blatantly obvious. Which, like, maybe they're not making it blatantly obvious, but it is pretty freaking obvious to fans. And, like, again, I'm not asking him to meddle in anything or what, just show us you're not asleep at the wheel, Terry. Like, I don't know. I don't really want to start going in too hard on him. Like, everything's already kind of been said already by us or others and everything, but that's really disappointing. I mean, last episode, I'm talking about players with lack of leadership. He is literally the head of it, and he's showing a lack of leadership. You're the leader of the entire. He's essentially the freaking leader of Buffalo at this point. Like, one of your sports franchises is historically embarrassing. Sending a, like, oh, things aren't great message just to season ticket holders. Yeah, you should definitely address them specifically for sure, because they're the ones at the beginning of the season forking over a ton of money. But there's also a ton of other fans that, like you said, the fans, without the fans, there's no team. That's how this works. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what I would want him to do, but it's more than what he's doing now. Don't start meddling. I don't want that crap. No one does.
It just seems from like an organizational structure, it, well, I mean, it's not even that it seems like that. I mean, it is that. They just, it doesn't seem like he has any idea what's going on. Just thinking about the John Roth guy he hired as a COO just a few months ago, and then he gets laid off after 4 years. It turns out he's has a relationship with like someone in HR in the Pegula Sports Entertainment office, and just small stuff like that is like, how does that stuff keep happening to this organization? How do they keep restructuring? And this is on both the Bills and Sabres side. It kind of gets masked on the Bills side because all you need in the NFL is an elite quarterback, and you could kind of skate through 10, 15 years.
And you make a
But I think
couple good
like this stuff,
hires. Yeah.
this stuff's gonna start coming up on their side too, once Josh Allen isn't the quarterback anymore. But it's just like, I just feel like this organization up top has really no idea how to structure this team in order to get them to start winning. It's all just on a whim.
Do you know how people, do you know how like an organization with a lot of people working in an office misbehaves? When your managers or the head of them are constantly phoning in from Florida.
Yeah.
You see them on a big screen for a couple hours a day. You have some meetings and then boom, you're off the leash for the right. Like, it's more complicated than that, whatever, interpersonal relationship. But again, it is widely known that they stay in Florida, which is they can. I'm not saying they can't, but it's not great when you have an entire office full of people and you're the people that are the head of it are seemingly never there.
And you're not just the owner too, but the team president as well. Like, there's a way to be an owner and stay in Florida the whole time. But if you want to stay heavily involved in this team, you can't be absent for the entire season. Like, the team president has to be the one keeping structure, keeping organization. And it just doesn't seem like the Sabres have had that at all since probably the Ted Black era.
Do you know what kind of owners get the leeway of not being there? Owners of teams that have made the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like, any time recently. That it's like, it is this bad, you have to roll up your sleeves. And you might have to suck it up and hold a press conference and talk to some reporters and answer some pretty freaking uncomfortable questions. Because, I mean, everyone takes the fall for them. Like, I'm not going, this is already a little bit too far than I've wanted to go, but.
No, yeah, well, that's just kind of the thing. Like, last time ownership did talk to the public was during that COVID press conference thing they did over Zoom back in May. And that, I don't think that was the exact point in time where Eichel asked out for a trade, but I imagine if your ownership comes onto a Zoom call and says you're going to be cutting costs, trying to be efficient and whatnot, that typically doesn't equate to winning hockey games. Man. So
but
if I hear that as a player on that team, I'm like, I could be playing literally anywhere else. Maybe Arizona. I don't know what their situation is. It's usually sketchy, but
rather play
anywhere
at
else,
Mullet
they're
going
to be trying to win.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, number one, we are trying to win. But number one with them was like, hey, we want to be efficient by cutting costs and maintaining our lifestyle. It's like, no, number one is winning. The sole existence of the Buffalo Sabres is to win the Stanley Cup. I wonder who said that. It was Terry. It was him. Not only have you not won the Stanley Cup, you haven't even made the playoffs. It's really bad. Yeah. Oh, one last thing for me to gripe about. You can miss me 100% with your Krebs criticism. I had people saying, I said he thrived when he got bumped up the lineup. I had people in my mentions, what are you talking about? He hasn't played that great. What are you talking about? He had one point in six games. It was six games, first of all. Second, the Sabres sucked this season. And if you actually looked at the games and watched him play and played with more skilled players, and you think he wasn't playing well, even though it wasn't necessarily showing up on the score sheet, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. And then you had a certain reporter, who will not be named, basically saying, well, he doesn't score goals. Yeah, he's a playmaker. He never has. That's like saying Jeff Skinner doesn't hit anyone. It's like he never does. Like, what are you talking about? It's not his game. And you have to adapt to him. You're the ones that traded for him. And now you're just going to bury him on the fourth line. But according to Granato, he's earned it. But when Casey Mittelstadt is struggling, when Jordan Greenway is struggling, it's a kiss on the cheek and say, you'll be just fine. We're going to punish someone else. I do not understand it. And if you think six games is a fair shake, you're just wrong. So I want to make it very clear. You can miss me with a Krebs criticism. If he plays a lot next season, if he plays half the season and he's not on this bottom line role where Zemgus Girgensons gets his first assist of the season in March, then fair enough. until then, you can miss me with that criticism. Get the hell out of here. I am so done with people trying to say, well, he's really not that good. You don't know. He hasn't been given the opportunity. He might not be, and you might be right. But you can't say it now because he hasn't been given the opportunity. And that's on Granato. And so, like, again, it is fair to criticize him if he's given the opportunity and he doesn't perform. And he's not given six games. He was the one that set up Robinson, who finally buried one. Good for him. Like, he is a good player. He is playing in a role that he is just not meant for. He's trying to fight dudes that are bigger than him. He's not a fighter. But he's doing it because he's a good teammate and he knows his role. Like, this is a good player to keep around. And they're just burying him on the fourth line. I don't know. Maybe they're tanking his value, so when they try to re-sign him to another contract, maybe it's a little less. But I'm not the only one saying this about Krebs, so I do feel vindicated to say you can miss me with your criticisms. He didn't play that well. It's not like he was a disaster out there. What are you talking about? You have to give him more time. He's been playing with, I don't want to say bums. He's been playing with the wrong line mates the entire season. And the second he looks good with better line mates. And then they're like, oh, well, now we know we can do it. Just send him right back down to the fourth line. You can miss me with this criticism. That's all I'm going to say on it. I really don't want to get too much more fired up. I've also felt like a few times during this episode I've been a little condescending, but I'm just pissed. Like, this is because, like, this team really isn't that far away from making the playoffs. We talked about it last season or last episode, but, like, they're really not that far from making the playoffs. They really aren't. They're a couple pieces away from, like, really being a good team. And obviously, you know, Dahlin playing a better season, Power playing a better season overall. Like, they've had really good patches at times. Thompson playing a better season, Cousins playing a better season, Jack Quinn not being hurt for the entire season, which feel terrible for him. Seems like a good kid and is a very good hockey player. He will launch himself into the stratosphere if that means getting to the center, middle of the ice and launching a shot. That is a player you want to keep around. So, fair enough. Some injuries can be to blame, but you also don't get any leeway when you've missed the playoffs this long. So, like, apologies if I've come off a little snarky or a little PO'd, but I am, man. Like, this is no matter what. Like, we will try to put a positive spin and say, next year could really be the year. This year is a failure. It is a failure. And there's specific things that could have been done to possibly change them or fix the trajectory of the season, and nothing was done. And that's where I really get upset. And then, you know, can't, as you know, with a bigger following and you know, more active on Twitter than I have, because, like, I still watch all the games, but I just, most of the time I just kind of stay off Twitter and, you know, don't try to, like, live tweet the game essentially. But, like, you're a lot more active on there. I let some of the comments get to me. Fair enough. And I know you can't do that, but I did. I know. It's lame. I'm lame. Fair enough. But I'm very adamant about that, about the whole Krebs thing. And I could be wrong. And I'm someone that is, I will say I'm wrong. I'm not going to be someone that's like, well, if you think of this or this or this, I was wrong about UPL. A couple of years ago, I gave up on Tage because the year before I was like, this, you know, I believe in him. This is the year. And then he stunk again. And I was like, I mean, I've done this for 2 years in a row. I can't really stick my neck out for him again. And then he blows up. So fair enough. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. And I could be wrong on this, but it's you can't say he hasn't done something when they haven't even given him a shot. So, rant over. Walt, you have the floor for the next however many minutes to go off on whatever you want to go off on.
You know, I mean, just talking about how, like, this Sabres team isn't that far away from the playoffs. I think, honestly, with this roster right now, I think this roster is good enough to make it to the playoffs. I mean, they didn't do that this season, but they have every piece they need to sneak into the playoffs. I mean, they're just 1 point away last season, have even better goaltending this season. They're,
oh my god, that's star the most player
Tage Thompson decides to turn into a 35 points in 53 or so games type of player. I think you really have to look at the top of this lineup. I know there's been some injuries, but these guys have let the team down this season just with their performances. And I don't really think there's, like, any way around that. Like, the depth guys have done everything you could ask them to do. I mean, the fourth line, than play they had the past few seasons. Paterka, breakout year. Mittelstadt continues to play where he left off last season. I'd argue that's even a breakout year as well. I mean, Greenway's been effective in his minutes. Benson wasn't even supposed to be here. Yeah. He somehow cracks the roster. He's been playing like pretty decent hockey. Scored maybe the best Sabres goal I've seen in the last decade against the Capitals. I mean, you're getting all these things bouncing your way, and then the top guys just—they're just not there. And I think that's—it's just so hard for, I think, a GM almost to improve things in season when your top guys are the ones that aren't showing up. I feel like it's a lot easier if you get those like Eichel, Reinhardt type teams where you got your top guys just going off, playing incredible hockey, but your depth pieces are obviously awful. I think in that situation, you'd be like, all right, let's add maybe a guy who's available or a guy in waivers, and they could bolster out the bottom of the lineup. But when you have the bottom of the lineup and the depth guy's playing well and the top guy's just not showing up at all, it's so hard to kind of save that. And I think that's been the biggest kind of thing with the Sabres this year. It's just the guys that haven't been performing are the guys that should be.
Yeah. I mean, it's just really disappointing. I pulled this up just to check things out. Kyle Pozo has 12 goals in 59 games, 10 assists as well. So like he's playing pretty well. Like I still think I'm actually kind of surprised he has that point total. I think some of them, I think the goal against Vegas was a little lucky. The puck just, like, he was in good position, but the puck just, like, bounced to him, and all he had to do was, like, bury it. Which, by the way, I was at that Vegas game. That was sweet. Do that more often, please. Holy crap. You wouldn't be hearing, you know, fire Donnie if you played like that, even if you lost the game. Like, I can see why people were saying fire Donnie when you're getting smoked at home, like, 7-1 to Columbus, and you're essentially giving up. But, you know, Pozo's played pretty well, and he's going to be an effective piece for whoever picks him up. He's actually made the playoffs 3 times. I thought it was only once, which, you know, I'm not the biggest history buff on mid-2000s New York Islanders seasons, so please forgive me. But he did make it in the 2013 playoffs, the 2015 and 2016 playoffs, which the 2016 playoffs, oops, excuse me, I just dropped my pen. They made it past the first round, so like he's actually made it past that round. Jeff Skinner has yet to make the playoffs. That's freaking brutal. I mean, I don't want to get too
1,000 games coming up too with him as well. I don't know what he's at right now. It's got to be only
You know what? We're just gonna keep riffing here at this point because I was gonna try to keep this under an hour long, and we're at an hour and 21 minutes plus the intro. That's about a minute. So we're just we're letting it all hang out.
14 games away. I just looked it up. He's games away.
But he is injured, so he might not be able to achieve that this season.
Be tight.
Yeah. Yikes. Oh, he played for the Markham Waxers. I used to play them. I used to get smoked by them. they used to call our tournaments up in Canada expensive practice because every single time we would go up there and just get absolutely smoked. I mean, shout out to my parents for sticking out that for so many years. Hockey was my worst sport that I loved the most. I was better at baseball. I was better at soccer. I was better. There was another sport I played. Holy crap, what was it? I think I honestly might have even been a better tennis player if I played longer, but I was like, nope, I love hockey. I was just like some scrawny kid just getting smoked. I could think the game really well, and I was like really good on like penalty kill or, you know, defending 2-on-1s or whatever, but I was just so scared with the freaking puck that I couldn't make an offensive move. I remember being like a kid and just getting like criticized by like young, dumb teammates of like if I ever turned over the puck, I would just get like yelled at or whatever by my teammates basically saying like, you suck, why would you do that or whatever. And, like, it just ingrained that in my head. It's like, all right, the second you get the puck, get that crap off your stick. So, like, I was essentially Josh Georges out there without the freaking hits. So, like, I'm not saying I was a good hockey player at all. I could think the game very well, for sure. That was, like, something that, like, every coach would tell me. It was just like, hey, man, like, if you just, like, physically could do it. I just refused to do, like, any off-ice, too, because I was like, I don't want to do that. Not realizing, oh, you might be better because you would do that. Again, this is, I don't know why I'm going on about me, but, yeah, there. let's just leave it at that, that I chose my worst sport possibly, just because I loved it so much. So that's where we're at. And it's kind of like the Sabres. They're the worst freaking hockey team over the past decade, but I still watch them all the time because I love it. So I also, like, I want to put this out there. I don't want to be angry about the Sabres. They've been bad for so long that it almost feels like people are like, people can get the sense of, like, any one of us, not just me, not just you, not just anyone in the Sabres space that kind of creates content for people to consume, whether they do it on a professional level for money or for us just doing it for the love of it and wanting to do it. Like, I personally, I don't want to constantly be mad and tweeting nasty things about the Sabres or coming on this podcast and crapping on dudes that are professional athletes, incredible athletes, top 0.01% of their field. Like, but at the same time, they can't make the freaking playoffs in a league that half the teams do. It's such a conflicting thing where you're just like so angry, but you're also like, these guys are like ridiculously good at their job kind of thing, but they're also bad at it technically. It's like such a, I don't like it. I wish I could just be like, yo, the Sabres are sweet. This is awesome. And just like banger after banger tweets of like, look how great these guys are. I'd rather be like, I'd be more motivated to put a highlight package of Zach Benson doing all these crazy cool moves and goals and stuff like that, or JJ Paterka streaking down the wing and scoring, instead of all the bullcrap calls that Zach Benson's been called for this season. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to hate the Sabres. And I shouldn't say hate. That's a tough word. But I don't want to, like, constantly be so upset about them. But kind of work with what you have, you know what I mean? So it's a tough situation, like, personally for me, and I'm sure other people are the same way. It's like, I love this team, but why do you make me so angry? Like, this is brutal.
Yeah, I mean, just being a content creator with the Sabres is pretty much a double-edged sword. You either get called way too positive or way too negative.
That is a tough line to toe.
You say,
like,
yeah,
I try to. It is really weird. Like, some people want you to just go spit fire and go nuts, and like, I kind of did that this episode a few times. My apologies if that was a little bit too much for you. And then there's the people that are like, you guys are so GD negative, like, what you're, you know, like, remember the Czech guys that came over for UPL or whatever?
Oh yeah.
And they're basically like, why, like, you guys are so negative and they play well when people are positive. I'm like, hey man, like, we've been watching this since like I was in freaking high school. Or I guess technically I wasn't able to watch them in high school because I wasn't here. But like, the second I got to college, I was able to start watching them again. They've sucked since then. I turned 30. Like, this is so long of complete mediocrity. And so it's just like, I want to be positive about them. I really do. And there are positives. This team, like, I personally, could they, like you said, you think they could have made this the playoffs this season. They have the makeup for it. I think so. If everything went really, really well.
Yeah.
But like, next year, I could really see them like being like, holy crap, like this, like comfortably a playoff team. Not, I shouldn't say comfortably, but like not constantly bobbing out of the wild card. Like, you know, like in the, you're constantly in the wild card kind of thing. I could see that. I could definitely see a fall off from Tampa. Toronto's kind of gone through some woes as well. They're starting to pick it up again. Who knows what's going on there? The Sabres are probably going to smoke them like 8-0 for no reason tomorrow, and then just completely crap the bet against Nashville, and now we're all going to be like, what just happened? But I don't know. Like, there is stuff to be positive about for sure, but at the same time, I'm also super hesitant and like have a super thick skin when it comes to GMs and their decisions that they're going to make. Tim Murray, Jason Botterill, like Kevin Adams. Like, I like Kevin Adams as a dude. I like most of these. I think I like every single person on the Sabres or in their organization as a person. If you got to know them deeply, maybe you would like more some than the others. But like, overall, there's no like guys that I'm glaringly like, I just genuinely don't like this dude. So like, there's good people in the organization and you want good people to do well. I do. Like, I really wish that Eric Johnson tore it up this season because he seems like a really good guy. He believed in what was going on here. It went terribly wrong, but I really wish everything went well with him, but it didn't. So it's like, It's weird. It's just I've been in like this weird mental space with the Sabres where like you can't constantly be negative about them. Like there's like that's a pretty bad way of constantly going about it, but there's positives. I don't know. I'm kind of talking myself in a circle. We're what, an hour and a half in. I feel like I've earned that right. But I don't know. There's positives, there's negatives. I'm losing my mind slowly. I just got a notice that it's going to snow next Monday, and it was 72 yesterday. So I'm confused. Everything's going wrong. Anything else, man? I mean, if you've made it this far in the podcast, I really do appreciate you. Like, you are a trooper, or you're just grinding out at work, or you have a really long drive or something like that, because that's what I did. I listened to like a million Sabres podcasts the other day while working. It's pretty nice. There's a lot of good podcasts out there. We, by the way, something, a little note for this, which my goal is to make sure Walt doesn't speak again for the rest of this episode, apparently. I'm going to try to get a couple guests, at least one guest on for our next episode, or maybe the episode after. It just kind of depends. Definitely this offseason, want to bring some guys in. I'm not going to name names because I don't want them to feel obligated to come on, but that is something I'm going to look forward to kind of get another perspective on here as well from ours. I'm sure there's going to be a lot that we agree on, but yeah, at the same time,
too much. That's our biggest problem.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just going to start making up things that I disagree. I'll be the Skip Bayless. I'll just start making outlandish claims. I don't.
That'll be the next five.
I don't really know what I would even say. They should bring back Cody Hodgson because he's back in the pros. Boom.
Oh yeah.
That's
kind of crazy that he's. I was trying to look up like how he was allowed to come back with like his what he's diagnosed with. So I couldn't find anything on it. So I don't know if they.
I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, this was the first year that he was no longer getting dead money from the Sabres because he was constantly making like 416 grand or something like that each season from the Sabres. I think, I could be wrong, but I think this was the first season that he was off their books. And I think that might be the reason why he could come back. It might have worked out timeline wise. And I, you know, all the best to him. Hopefully, like having some kind of, you know, condition or disease or anything that takes you out of hockey or any injury, anything like that, it's super sad. You never want to hear that for any kind of player.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, maybe that has something to do with it as well. Maybe he was able to come back last season, but he was still getting paid by the Sabres. There was this whole thing and he was like, look, I'll just keep training and, you know, sign with them again. Because I remember after the Sabres he did go to Nashville and he was playing for their affiliate by the end of his career. In Milwaukee.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I don't think the buyout had anything to do with it. I think he just made, because he was advised to stop playing. I know like towards the end of his career, he started having heart palpitations. He was urinating blood.
Oh my God.
A bunch of really bad side effects.
Okay, I didn't know.
And his body would just cramp up and shut down. And then he's diagnosed with, I believe it's malignant hypothermia, which pretty much means your body just overheats.
Oh my God.
I think that's kind of like the general thought behind it. And a lot of people, like, this was a disease like 40 years ago, had a pretty high mortality rate amongst like younger people that had it. Now they've created like more stuff around it. I think it's like a gene mutation, so I think that kind of helped with the progress they made with the disease. But I actually just watched a video of around when Cody Hodgson retired from the NHL, and he's at like malignant hypothermia like fundraisers and stuff like that. Like, he's with kids who've been diagnosed with it. Like, he's truly seems like just like a fantastic guy.
Yeah.
Which makes it like kind of all the more sad that his career had to end that way. Cause I truly think he's a hockey player where if he didn't have this illness, I mean, the fact he's able to have this career with the illness that he had is pretty insane. But if it didn't get so bad towards the end of his career, I think he probably would have been a Saber for a while. And I think he could have been a pretty decent player for them. And I think he could have been a guy that helped the Sabres leap from those tankier teams onto building with Eichel and Reinhardt. Like, I think that was the plan when they had him, was for him to be that type of guy. So the fact that his career was cut so short, it's definitely sad, but it's awesome to see him back playing pro hockey again. It's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, all the best to him for sure. He was so good. The only thing I had beef with was his skating. I'd come from a bad skater. It's like, it makes it so much more complicated. But his hands, his vision, his... Yeah. I mean, with that skating, he obviously had to have a good hockey sense to, you know, be places before guys were there and just have better anticipation. So, you know what? I'm just happy he's back playing because he obviously loves the game. And if he's, you know, doing fundraisers and everything like that, he's helping others as well. All the best to him. 100%. That's, you know, that's a really good positive note to end this on too. With all the negativity around like the Sabres, specifically coming from me too, there's like, this is a game that, you know, people love and are willing to do what he did, you know, go through all of that and come back and play. I mean, that's just a testament to him as a person. And all the best to him, you know. Hopefully Milwaukee makes the finals and the Rochester makes the finals and he comes back. And if he comes, if that actually happens and we can get tickets to the finals, I'm bringing a sign saying, "Welcome back, Cody Hodgson," you know, something like that. I'm not a sign guy. I'm not a huge, you know, person like that.
Hodgson shirtsy too in the closet, I think. I think I still got a Hodgson shirtsy back from when I was in high school.
There you have it. But that's just, it's a great story. I'm glad that we're ending on it. Again, if you've made it this far in the podcast, couldn't thank you enough for supporting us this episode, through all the episodes and episodes to come. I think I usually leave it as the last word for Walt, so he's going to take us out.
Well, I mean, I would thank everyone for listening to us talking about the Sabres again, and you know what? Let's try to make it to the playoffs this season. I know it's
2% chance. I think I forgot to mention that this episode. It is, as of today, according to Money Puck, 2% chance.
It's going to happen. I'm feeling it. Maybe not realistically, but it'll make it more fun if I am feeling it.
All right. Let's do the push. I know this was your last word, but I wasn't expecting you to say that, but we'll see.
Let's just do it.
Let's just do it.
0%.
Yeah, just do it. Guys, just Shia LaBeouf, do it. Just make the playoffs. Just do it. Appreciate everyone listening again. We'll be back shortly with another episode, hopefully with some guests. Appreciate you listening. We'll catch you.